Uh-oh. It's time for the work show.
Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down. Working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
5 o'clock in the morning, I'm already up and gone. Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on?
Better working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Working
in a coal mine,
going
down, down, down.
Working
in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
'Cause I make a little money, hauling coal by the ton. But when Saturday rolls around, I'm too tired for having fun.
Too tired for having, I'm just working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Working
in a coal mine,
going
down, down, down.
Working
in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Lord, I'm so tired. How long can this go on?
Better working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Working
in a coal mine,
going
down, down, down.
Working
in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
5 o'clock in the morning, I'm already up and gone. Lord, I'm so tired. Get this going on.
Better working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Working
in a coal mine,
going
down, down, down.
Working
in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
'Cause I make a little money hauling coal by the ton. But when Saturday rolls around, I'm too tired for having fun.
Too tired for having, I'm just working in a coal mine, going down, down, down. Working
in a coal mine, whoop,
about to slip down.
Working
in a coal mine,
going
down, down, down.
Working
in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down.
Welcome to the Work Show. My name is Paul Smart, and I'll be your host for this over the coming term. This program was begun last year by Laura Konreuther and Max Goldfarb. For our first edition today, we're going to be speaking with Liz Coleman, who has been the meter maid for the city of Hudson for a number of years. We met on a bristly cold December morning and walked our way the entirety up Warren Street in the city of Hudson.
In fact, it was just the other day, I met Claire Danes and her husband, Hugh Dancy. Mm-hmm. I've met Mario Batelli, the chef. I've met Mary Stewart Matheson and her husband. I met Bruce Dern. And I've met, I'm not sure how you pronounce her name, but she's on The Good Wife.
Uh-huh.
I met her, Julia Margolis, or something like that.
It's Arthur, lovely Miss Rita. Girl always stands on the park and meet her. Can come between us. When it gets dark, I tore your heart away. Nothing can come between us. Standing by a parking meter, when I caught a glimpse of Rita, filling in a ticket in a little white book. In a cap, she looked my shoulder, and the bag across her shoulder. Free to
My job description is parking enforcement, which includes doing all the meters in Hudson. Plus, we have to do illegal parking, such as no parking zones, fire hydrants, handicap zones. And that pretty much covers it.
And how long have you been doing this?
I've been here 7 years now. And I love it.
And how did you find out about the job? How did you get the job?
Actually, it's kind of a funny story because the job I was working on had closed down. They had went out of business. So I decided to retire. And one night, my daughter was in Dunkin' Donuts, and the mayor came in and said, "Is your mom still working?" And she says, "No." He says, "Well, let her know I have a job for her." So I called up about the job, and it was this one. And what I always did every day is I always walked. So I said, I might as well take this job and be able to walk and talk and get paid for it.
Oh, that's great. And are you from Hudson originally?
I am.
Where do you live in town? Are you right in the city?
Uh-huh. We bought a house on 226 Columbia Street.
So you can walk to work.
I do.
And so what's in it's a part-time job?
It is. We work, like I said, Hudson has been divided into two sections because of the Amtrak station. It's a lot of ground to cover, so there's always two people on every day, and we work 3 days a week. I do Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and my coworker does Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday.
And
Saturdays.
So how long does it take in a day?
Woo! Well, we're here from 9 to 5, so...
Uh-huh.
And we usually, you know, we have our two breaks and our lunch, but other than that, we're on the street walking.
So what are the challenges of this job?
The challenges is trying to make people understand and not get mad when they get a ticket. Because a lot of people get upset, and it's all in the way that you approach the person. If you approach them with a good concept of what's going on, they'll usually calm down, and it's all good. But then lots of times you get people that, no matter what you try to say to them, they don't want to hear it, they don't want the ticket. So in them instances, we just walk away. We tell them what their right is to contest the ticket and so forth, and then just walk away because it's not worth arguing over. And that's not what we're here for.
Do you have to remind people that it is just a job, or do
yes.
they associate
yes.
you with
the... Yes, we do tell them that, and we understand how they feel sometimes, but, you know, it's not... We're just doing our job,
When was the last time you got a parking ticket?
Actually, it was like, I think maybe three years ago.
Uh-huh.
I actually got one for, it was wrong side parking. It was Thanksgiving. And down where I live on Columbia Street, once a week we have to alternate side parking. And I actually forgot to put my car on the other side, and I had a ticket on my car when I came out. And I went right up to the police station and paid it that day. And I just love this job because I've met so many wonderful people. And it's not all about giving out tickets. We're not out here just to give tickets. We're just here, we're doing our job, making sure the traffic flows on our main streets where all our businesses are. And it's also like public relations. We want, you know, we're representing the police department, and we want them to have a good image.
And what had been some of your previous jobs before this?
I worked in the Columbia Memorial Hospital for 4 years in the cafeteria. And then I worked at Just a Buck. I was a assistant manager there, and they're the ones that went out of business when I got this job. And I also worked at the St. Charles Hotel, but that was like a long years ago.
What was the first job you ever had?
Burger King. At that time, it was called Carol's Restaurant. I was like 20 years old, I believe.
And how do you, over the 7 years that you've been walking the streets of Hudson, how has it changed?
Oh, I've seen so many changes, and it's all for the better. At one time, it was like almost like a ghost town. Mm-hmm. It was boarded up. All the stores were boarded up and everything. So now it's like, it's moving forward. I think it's progressing in the way it should go. On snow days, we're just like the mailman. Rain, sleet, or snow, we're out here.
So what hours do you work?
From 9 a.m. to 5 p.m.
And are there evening meter people?
No. Meter stop at 5 o'clock.
Okay. And have you ever had to call in sick?
No, I haven't.
That's good.
The only reason I've taken days off was because my daughter is in the military. And if she's coming home and I have to pick her up from the airport or whatever, that's the only time I've ever taken time off.
And how does things work then? Does somebody else spot you and then you spot
yes.
them?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so amongst all the meter people, are you all meter mates or are there meter masters too?
We're evened out. We have two ladies and two men.
And who do you work? Who's the supervisor? Or how does that work in terms of supervision for the...
Well, Betty Scott is our police clerk, but Chief Richardson is...
So you work
who we go to, yeah.
And what happens if you hear... Have you come across other things where you've had to call in other police?
Mm-hmm. That's why we have our radio. And if we see any incident that we can call an officer and they'll come wherever we are. I've had to call in like accidents. I've just been like fender benders on the street. And I have called in, and some lady had found a lost dog. So I had to call the officers in to come get the dog. Things like that. I was thinking about retiring at 62, but I don't know. I don't think so. So I may be here a few more years. Maybe seven at the most. Seven more years.
Uh-huh.
That would be it.
And how far back do the meter... Do you remember meter people from when you were growing up?
Oh, I do. I do. I remember Martha was like the best. Martha, she's going to kill me. I can't think of her last name right now. Got it right on the tip of my tongue. What? She was one of the best.
What made her one of the best? Just friendly and...
Mm-hmm. She was friendly and she did her job well. And that's the way you have to be. You can't show favoritism. And people have to understand it's not like a personal thing against them. It's just that we're doing our job. And that is our job, to give tickets if you are breaking the law.
So do you consider yourself part of the public sector? I mean, who do you see as kind of your compatriots in the world of employment? Not first responder, but I guess public servants?
Yeah, I would say that. I'd say we're a public service to the city, because that's the whole point of the two-hour parking, is to keep the cars, the traffic flowing, so everybody gets a chance to come here and do their shopping.
Has there been a change with the number of kind of mobile restaurants now in town?
Oh, yeah, we have a lot more, and it's exciting. I think our city is moving in such a positive direction, and I hope it continues to do that.
So how do you do? How do you warm up during the day?
Lots of coffee, and we do have places where we can go in and out and get warmed up.
And do you bring lunch during the day, or do you?
Actually, I go to my house since it's so close.
Uh-huh.
So I can go right home and have lunch with my. I have my little baby. I call her Boo Boo, my little dog home. So I go and spend my lunch break with her.
And how often do you run through shoes on this stuff?
I bet you a good every 4 or 5 months.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And So what streets do you do?
We actually do, depending on what section you're in. Downtown is from Fifth Street down to Amtrak Station. Uptown is from Fifth Street all the way around Columbia Memorial Hospital.
And is it just Warren, or do you do the side?
We do the side streets also. And all the city municipal lots, parking lots.
And what about, say, Columbia or Allen or any of those streets?
No. We usually just stay on the metered.
Okay.
Metered streets.
And have you ever had the, what about kind of major scoff laws?
Oh, well, now it's the boots. Okay. We have the boot law. If you have 3 tickets that are a month overdue, then they will come and boot your car. You have 24 hours to pay the entitled, the whole ticket amount, plus 110 for the boot. If you don't pay that within 24 hours, they tow your car.
Now, how does that work? You call the boot people?
It comes up on a machine that they have tickets that are overdue, and then tow company comes and they do the boot.
Okay.
This is part of my job also.
Oh, it's feeding the...
Feeding all my dogs that are out here looking.
Oh.
I wish we had a camera, right? This is Bonnie and Clyde. There you go. Ooh, see you later, guys.
How many dogs do you feed more in here?
1, 2... Around 6 or 7. So I always have a pocket full of treats.
And is that something that you started doing yourself, or?
Well, I think I did. Uh-huh. I just started carrying because I'm an animal lover. I love animals. So that's how that began.
So you must know everybody along the street.
Close to it.
Not believe.
M.A. Wiltsey at Columbia Green Workforce has spent the last few years looking after the employment situation in both of her counties. We will be catching up with her once a month to find out what's happening specifically that might be of interest to those searching for a job, as well as just some of the general trends that she sees in the Columbia and Green area. This following interview was made in December of 2011.
2011 was better than 2010, and it was better, definitely better than 2009, but it was not as strong as we would like it to be, or did not come close to the employment and the work activity that before the recession. But there was small improvements, and the unemployment rate did drop a little, and more people were back to work.
Were there differences county to county, working with both Columbia and Greene counties?
Traditionally, Greene County's unemployment rate has always been a little higher than Columbia County's. Mm-hmm. I'm not exactly sure why, except for perhaps the mountaintop kind of explains it, in the sense that it takes longer for people up there to get to any kind of employment center, whereas even the far reaches of Columbia County, like if you're talking the New Lebanon area or those areas, they can get into Massachusetts and Pittsfield quicker. So the commute and those kinds of things, I think, explains a little bit of Greene County's higher rate of unemployment than Columbia County's.
How did there are a lot of, we had some major weather events in the past year, from odd winter storms to Irene and Lee. How did that affect what you do in the employment picture in these two counties?
Well, there was, for people that were directly affected by the storms and lost their jobs because of it, they were able to collect disaster unemployment insurance payments. Even if they were a store owner or something and their store got wiped out, traditionally, because they're an owner, they wouldn't be eligible for unemployment insurance, but because of the special grant, they were. So we did see an uptick in people collecting. We never really met them, though, because we were all stuck up on the mountain, and they were doing recovery activities. So since they were under this special program, and the hope was that they were going to be able to return to their employer once recovery occurred, they weren't asked to do anything special with us in terms of looking for a new job.
Mm-hmm. What have been some of the areas in terms of new jobs that you have been working with over the past year? Are there any specific areas of employment that you've been pushing people towards? Or?
Well, in terms of job growth local, the one thing that's happened this past year was Flanders coming in the old CAS building. And so I think that was a real good economic development effort by the folks in Columbia County to get that company here, because the skill set of those jobs were very similar to the skill set required by the people that worked at CAS. So it's giving a lot, and I believe they are hiring a lot of ex-CAS employees to work there. It hasn't quite ramped up, but they're growing. They're getting ready to be in full production at Flanders. In terms of general overall job growth and where we see the economy and the world heading, it's all related to math and science. Locally, the one place where there's a demand for workers where they might have a hard time filling jobs is in healthcare, skilled healthcare. And that's local as well as regional. But anything with the math, science background, engineering, higher skilled jobs are where the growth is and where there's more of a chance for finding employment.
What about the things like in Columbia County, Etsy, there's been a lot of talk about new agriculture. There's this whole, after the census, there was a a lot of talk about the second home community in the county and the kind of rising profile of the arts. Has that had any effect on any of this had any effect on a larger employment basis?
Etsy is kind of an exciting thing. We've had, I think, a couple of conversations with them in terms of, but their hiring has, they've been pretty stable with that. They have a call center here. Mm-hmm. So what other things related to the arts, I haven't
And in terms of
much.
The new agriculture, is that?
The new agriculture thing is the there's a a goat farm that in a cheese farm mm-hmm. in Columbia County that's expanding, and we anticipate working with them when their expansion is complete and they need to hire new workers. I think the whole idea of the agribusiness model that is happening in Columbia County and is very exciting in terms of it directly related to employment growth right now. We haven't seen it too much yet.
And is there any equivalence to Flanders or any of that on the Greene County side?
In terms of a large new company coming in, no. Dynabil, Ducommun, sorry, mm-hmm. it's Ducommun now, is expanding and has hired, is continuing to hire people. In terms of manufacturing, I would say that's probably the strongest growth that I can remember for Greene County. I hope I'm not forgetting somebody.
Is Stiefel staying stable? I mean, I'm hearing all sorts of rumblings out of there.
I hear rumblings, too, and I haven't seen anything yet.
And how bad was the effects of the drops at Holcim and some of the other...
The Holcim guys, that was a difficult situation because... the people that worked there for a long time, and they were making very nice dollars. Replacing those kinds of wages is difficult. Also, yeah. School districts, there have been a lot of teachers coming through our door, and it's been difficult because there aren't, wherever they go, people are laying off teachers, you know. So it's not just locally, it's the surrounding area. So for educators to find employment at the K-12 level, it's difficult. Liberal arts education, people are going to have the highest unemployment rate. I mean, if you're talking about people with bachelor's degrees and so forth, those are definitely transferable skills that can be seen and used in other areas. But if you come out with a degree in a specific occupational area, that is math and science and based, engineering based, your unemployment rate is going to be a lot lower. Now, the jobs that are out there are more, you're going to, if you have a bachelor's degree or higher, you're going to have a better chance of getting employment. Your unemployment rate is a lot less than people without a degree. Your chances of finding a job incrementally go up based on your education. The lower your education, the higher your unemployment rate. Your chances of finding a job are going to be. People with a high school diploma, people without an associate's degree, their unemployment rate is twice what people is for, or three times higher than if you have a bachelor's degree or higher.
And
Actually, right now, the trades are not doing well because they're usually related to construction. And so... there are probably less people interested in going into those occupations because the unemployment rate for those people is high. The one interesting thing, I think, in terms of K-12 going through a change is with the Tech Valley High School and the things that they're trying to do. And they include internships and things along that line. Businesses and small businesses have a hard time in terms of mentoring students. They're busy trying to keep their business going. And then large businesses are not necessarily the ones that are located here. And they're the ones that tend to offer those kinds of opportunities because they're so large, they have people that they can devote to that kind of activity. So I don't.
How are things looking for 2012?
Well, I'm hoping they're going to be a little bit better than they were in 2011. Nationally, they're not projecting huge improvement in the job market, but I'm hoping that we will see improvement in Columbia and Greene counties. And, you know, more people are employed locally than are nationwide in terms of our unemployment rate is below the state and the national average. So that's a good thing.
Does the whole nanotechnology push up in the capital region, is that going to feed the employment?
I think potentially in the future. I haven't heard of anything specifically happening down here yet, but the projections are that once the nanotech facility gets going in Malta, that there's going to be a lot of feeder companies providing supplies and materials and everything else that's needed up there. And it's possible that those kinds of companies might start moving down south to provide that, because we're also kind of in the middle of up in Malta and another nano manufacturing down around the Fishkill area, I believe. So it kind of puts us in the middle of those two things in terms of supply line activities.
John McInerney of Athens, New York, and of New York City, is a family therapist and psychoanalyst who works with a lot of people who have come into difficult times with their work lives. He calls his company's website loveandwork.com, which he says, shows the two parallels that kind of draw our lives, most importantly. The following interview was made in the town of Athens in the beginning of January 2012.
Well, I'm a clinical social worker, psychotherapist, and family therapist, and I have a private practice in New York City and also up here in Athens. And I've been doing that for about 30 years.
Now, how did you start into that field?
Well, I was a community organizer in England for a couple of years. I got into that because some friends of mine had one of the first portable video cameras around, and that was in the West Country in Bath, in the west of England. And so we did some community organization and political activism stuff using that and helping people to understand what television was really behind the scenes. The simple fact, for instance, that news programs were edited and so on. It was an attempt to kind of demystify the media and give people a deeper understanding of what they were watching on TV. So they didn't just take everything they saw and heard as gospel, you know. There's an editorial policy. People make decisions. You only get to hear what they want you to hear or see. So we did that for a while. And then I was working, amongst other things, with kids. And that got me into social work. And I worked in a residential institution for kids for a few years.
In England.
Short-term residency where we did what was in those days was called observation and assessment, where we worked with runaways and kids that were in danger at home, and helped to figure out what would be the best place for them to go to, whether, you know, we could do some work with the family, do some rehab and get them back home to live, or get them into a safe place where they could spend the rest of their childhood and grow up in a safe environment with caring people and, you know, get on with their lives. And then I went back to school to become a clinical social worker. And then after that, I trained as a family therapist.
And what was your first degree and your first schooling experience?
That was my first college. That was my first experience at college, actually. I was a high school dropout. I was I left home young and just, you know, worked my way around and decided. I was in my early 20s at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And that was when I decided to go to school and, you know, pursue something that I felt I was really had a passion for. I had done some photography before that and worked in a photographic store selling photographic equipment and professional sound and film equipment and so on.
And where were you born and raised?
I was born in Ireland. And we migrated, my family migrated to England back in the 50s because there was no work in Ireland. My father was a craftsman plasterer. But there was plenty of work in England after the Second World War. There was a lot of restoration work. So my father went there to work, and we gradually, in the traditional manner of emigre families, we, you know, as the kids got old enough to go over to England and join my father, they all did. And then because I was the youngest, I was the last one to go with my mom. I think that was in 1957.
And where, did you all, were you settled there or did you move around?
No, we were settled. We settled in the west of London in a very nice suburb called Ealing. And we lived there until 1964. And then we went back to Ireland in 64 when I was finished with elementary school. My father wanted me to get a good Irish education, so...
Mm-hmm.
So...
And did you get a good Irish education?
It depends on what you think of as a good Irish education. I mean, in those days, a good Irish education meant fairly liberal doses of corporal punishment, you know. So, yeah, in that sense, I definitely got a good Irish education, you know, which included Latin, by mm-hmm. the way, which I'm actually quite grateful for that part of it because, you know, it gave me a good, a deeper understanding of language.
And did your father find work? Did he go back to work, or did he find work once he got back?
No, we had bought some property in Ireland, so my father went back to renovate some property there, and we had inherited a house from my aunt and uncle. Actually, that's an interesting story because my mother's sister married my father's brother. So
there's a song in there.
There's a song in there, exactly. No, everybody worked. You know, all my siblings, all my you know, they're all older than me. As I said, I'm the youngest. So everybody worked when they left school, which was, you know, everybody left school at around 16, 17. Mm-hmm. And they all worked. You know, they went straight out to work. I had four sisters and one brother.
And would they stay with that work or bounce from one thing to another?
Well, I think in the girls' cases, they, you know, they, I think they, I really don't know too much about that. I was pretty young. I think the girls kind of moved around a bit. My brother worked fairly steadily, though, you know. But the girls moved around somewhat, and, they had boyfriends, and they got engaged, and then they got married, and, you know, everybody in those days, everybody got married relatively young. And certainly in our culture.
And so the work long. Part of one's life was simply just a part of one's life and not what pulled it, I guess.
Except in my father's case, because my father was a pretty dedicated craftsman, mm-hmm. so artisan, did a lot of ornamental plaster work and restoration work. So in his case, and he was a fourth generation. His great uncles had gone to Italy to study there, and so in his case, I think his work to my father, his work was really as much a vocation as anything else. You know, he was really dedicated to his work and to fine craftsmanship. And nobody else in the family really had a career. Mm-hmm. You know, it was just whatever you could get. You know?
Was there any push to kind of pass on your father's craft?
My father never pushed me, no. Never. I worked with him and helped him when I was a kid, but there was never any there was never any pressure on me to do that. I mean, you know, we were a migrant family, so we followed, as a lot of migrant families do. We kind of, you know, we followed the economic flow of the time, which is why we moved from Ireland to England in the first place, you know. And, of course, we were Irish in England, so that was a whole thing unto itself, you know. England still is to some extent, but in those days it was very much a class-based society. And if you were an immigrant, you know, England opened its doors after the war to a lot of people from the colonies, from India and Pakistan, and from the Caribbean, and from days coming to America. It was very much about I really wanted to practice my profession, and there was there were no opportunities in England at that time to do private practice. You could only work for an institution.
And had you done that for a while after getting your degree?
Oh, yeah. I worked at a child guidance clinic that was based at a pediatric hospital, and we had a family therapy clinic there. I did a lot of work with the premature baby unit, with families who had premature infants, and a lot of work with, you know, adolescents and young parents. You know, Freud says there's really only two things: love and work. You know,
that's your website.
That's my website, loveandwork.com. Yeah, and I think, you know, those are the two structures that kind of help us to feel cohesive and integrated, you know, to the extent that we're engaged in those two spheres of operation, love and work, interpersonal relationships and work, and that we achieve satisfaction in those two areas, we feel good about ourselves. And I come from a family with a very strong work ethic, so that's always been a driving force in my life.
Does the work ethic get passed on from family, or is it embedded in our schooling as well?
I think it's really a developmental issue. I should say an experiential issue. I've certainly seen kids who come from families that don't have a good work ethic, but they find themselves through their education, deriving a lot of satisfaction from something, a subject, you know, physics, chemistry, music, and they throw themselves into it in order to find that place where they can, that medium, you know, through which they can relate to the world in a more satisfied and essentially integrated way.
Big John. Big John.
Every morning at the mine you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Nobody seemed to know where John called home. He just drifted into town and stayed all alone. He didn't say much, he kind of quiet and shy. And if you spoke at all, you just said hi to Big John. Somebody said he came from New Orleans, where he got in a fight over a Cajun queen and a crashing blow from a huge right hand sent a Louisiana fella to the promised land. Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Then came the day at the bottom of the mine when a timber cracked and men started crying. Miners were praying and hearts beat fast, and everybody thought that they'd breathed their last except John. Through the dust and the smoke of this man-made hell walked a giant of a man that the miners knew well, grabbed a sagging timber and gave out with a groan, and like a giant oak tree just stood there alone, Big John.
Big John.
If you don't mind if I could change the question a little bit.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think it's necessarily about our working lives. I think it's about our work environment. And I would include that to mean the employers. And I'm not talking about your small neighborhood businesses or small town businesses like we have around here. I'm talking about larger corporations where there's very little loyalty to one's employees, and so the kind of structure that one used to go into when one went to work for a large corporation really doesn't exist anymore, and that's not just because of cost cutting. It's because of attitude, you know. I understand, of course, that in the digital world, we live in a world where innovation is widely dispersed because of the web and so on and so forth. So people can work at home and they don't even have to go to a workplace. But many people still do go to a workplace, mm-hmm. and the idea of a relationship with the people that one employs, I think, in my experience, I think that has been undercut and it's been somewhat diminished. You know, the primary thrust of the culture is towards internal competition. There isn't a culture of developing loyalty to the mission of the corporation. That's not encouraged. It's not encouraged by the corporation, and it's not encouraged by the culture in general. People are awarded for being self-seeking, and self-serving. And so you get a lot of people competing with each other within a corporation, rather than working together, mm-hmm. to move the agenda forward. You know, that's what I'm talking about. At least I want to instill values into my kids of independence and autonomy and the willingness to pick up, move on, and look for something new. But at the same time, I'd like to think that I also both Deirdre and I convey to the kids the importance of a sense of loyalty and a sense of commitment. And I don't know how you address it from the point of view of the larger culture. I don't. I think it's an individual task, really. You know, mm-hmm. And it is. You know, it is a complex thing because the whole idea of self-advancement is. It's fine. There's nothing, you know. There's nothing essentially wrong with it. It makes sense, certainly in this culture where, you know, which is driven by the idea of, you know, the rugged individual who can deal with the rough and tumble of everyday life and, you know, become an innovator and a, you know, empire builder and blah blah blah. But that doesn't account for most of the people in society. You know, it's fine to have it as a myth of the West and the, you know, the lone. The guy riding off into the sunset, the lone hero, but that's not who most people are, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are embedded in a community of others, and they're you know, deeply connected into a community of others, and that's who we are as a species, you know. And you know, that's really, I think, not reflected in the workplace. In large part, and I think that's a problem because it makes business difficult, you know. Mm-hmm. Because if your structure is set up so that it's in conflict with what is essentially, you know, for the most part, human nature, I think the chances of you being successful are slimmer. You know, I mean, you might make a lot of money, but you know, if that's your goal, fine. But I don't think that's necessarily what it's all about. I think that we're, you know, we're driven by this myth, this Darwinian myth that life is all about survival. And we get up every day and we think about what we have to do to survive. And I don't think that's really what goes on at all. I think that we're just fairly simple living organisms, and we just proceed from moment to moment doing the best we can just to sustain ourselves. I think survival is another step, you know. I think we just sustain ourselves. We kid ourselves that we're, you know, making wonderful progress. Of course, you know, we've created all these wonderful illusions or even delusions that we are making wonderful progress. The digital world, of course, is one of them, and it's wonderful. You know, I love it. But the fact of the matter is that we haven't changed very much in 50,000 years. We're still just put one foot in front of the other and just try to sustain ourselves from one end of the day to the other, and from moment to moment. You know, you know, if we could. I think if we were able to lower our expectations somewhat, and that's a very unfashionable thing to say, but if we were able to do that, if we were able to have more realistic expectations of life, we'd be a lot happier. You know, the Buddha said that we make our own misery with our thoughts. We make our own suffering with our thoughts, and most of that has to do with our desire for things, you mm-hmm. know. And I think if we could, most of us could lower our level of expectation, we'd be a lot happier.
Thank you.
work so hard till the sun's going down. Working on the highways and byways and wearing a frown. You hear the morning, their lives away. Then you hear somebody say,
don't you know
that's the sound of the men working on the chain. That's the sound of the men working on the chain. I'm going home one of these days. I'm going home to see my woman whom I love so dear. But meanwhile, I've got to work right here.
Well, don't you know
that's the sound of the men working on the chain. That's the sound of the men working on the chain.
Music for today's program came from the great Lee Dorsey, that's Working in a Coal Mine, from Hugh Roy doing a version of the Beatles' Meter Maid, from the Roaches doing their Mr. Selleck, from Van Morrison doing I've Been Working from his locally made street choir album, from Jimmy Dean of Sausage Fame doing his great Bad Job, was from Mr. McInerney, and finally from the late Rick Danko of the band, doing the wonderful song Chain Gang.
Working on the chain.
We'll see you in a month. This is Paul Smart.